Good evening from Washington. This is Gil Kingsbury with a transcribed edition of the Washington Front, a discussion of events in the Capitol. For these past few weeks, we've been hearing much here in Washington about domestic problems, labor taxes, the budget, and housing. The Congress has given much thought, too, to foreign affairs. This week, they heard from Representative Jacob K. Javits of New York, heard him tell of conditions in Europe. Congressman Javits, before arriving in the Capitol for his first term, made a trip of inspection. He visited the Holy Land. He visited Greece. The New York congressman is at our microphone to bring us the report given to his congressional colleagues. Congressman, will you tell us of your inspection?
Just prior to the opening of the 80th Congress, I sought information about certain critical world problems in a trip to Palestine, Greece, Rome, and London. I was rather careful in the course of my trip to reserve comment and conclusions for a report such as this. My visit to Rome was to seek enlightenment on the religious side. The audience which I was privileged to have with His Holiness Pope Pius XII had no political connotations, and I therefore omit it from this report. The audience may be interested in knowing, however, of the terms of love and esteem in which His Holiness spoke of the people of the United States. The problems presented by Greece and Palestine are of special interest. The time I spent abroad was necessarily brief, just under a month. But I tried very hard to interview men and women representative of all shades of opinion. I had given considerable study previously to the problems of these countries, and though I do not pretend to have become an expert on them, certain facts and impressions of this experience stand out so markedly that I hope they may prove to be of value to Congress.
Well, Congressman, tell me, just how extensive was your trip in Palestine?
I traveled the length and breadth of the country, literally from Dan to Beersheba. I talked not only with the man in the street, Jew and Arab alike, and with journalists, but also with the heads of the Jewish Agency, with the representatives of our State Department, with the British High Commissioner and the Chief Secretary, with the British Commanding General at Haifa, where the immigration troubles with refugee ships have taken place, with the head of the Jewish community, with the president of the Hebrew University, with leading Arab intellectuals, with the chief rabbi of Palestine, with businessmen, industrialists, and lawyers, and with managers and residents of Jewish agricultural settlements throughout the country.
Well, tell me, what about the economic life of the people in the Holy Land, particularly the Jewish people?
An interesting phase of life in Palestine is that the Jews have achieved an economic balance there not present among them anywhere else in the world. About 20% of the Jewish population are farmers, which is about the same as the overall percentage for the United States population. But throughout the world, only about 3% of Jews are estimated to be farmers. The Jewish population in Palestine is about 600,000, and the Arab is about 1,200,000. The types of Jewish agricultural settlement in Palestine are of three kinds. The first, and the most numerous, is the small town, just like our own country town. Second, the agricultural settlement, where the land is privately owned, but where both the selling of produce and the buying of supplies are controlled by cooperatives for all. Farm cooperatives are also well known to us. And last, the much-discussed communal settlements, where there is no private property, but all is held and worked together.
Well, there's a popular conception, I believe, Congressman, that the Holy Land is something of a desert. Are any steps being taken to utilize and improve the soil?
We have all heard of the work of soil utilization in Palestine. It is very inspiring to see what are truly these miracles. In the Valley of the Jordan, great boulders have been moved away with the United States bulldozers, and the fields have been made into waving gardens of green. The hills of Judea have been cleared of stones and rocks, and the fertile terraces of ancient days restored to bare olive trees again. The Negev occupies almost one half of Palestine's 10,000 square miles. It is a dust bowl type of parched prairie, which could, with irrigation, be as rich as the Imperial Valley of California, in which an estimated 80,000 Bedouins normally lived until the Jews threw in a dozen settlements overnight recently.
Well, what's the possibility for additional development there?
The possibilities for agricultural development in the Negev are shown at the experimental settlement of Beth Eshel near Beersheba, where great fruitfulness in the land has resulted from irrigation and also from special farming methods. This Negev is the main area to be benefited by the proposed Jordan Valley Development Project. Given the necessary money, the will and inspiration shown by these existing settlements indicate that the Palestinian land can certainly take a great many additional families.
Well, Congressman, in this day, when we hear so much of taxes and budget requirements, it's probably natural to ask, about the cost of such developments.
I made some inquiries into the question, of course. The estimates varied, but the consensus seems to be that 100,000 additional families could be settled on the land with an investment of outside capital of one-half to $1 billion, certainly an attainable figure.
Well, we've heard a lot about the social tension in the Holy Land, the violence. It's a major factor in the present situation, or is it?
Social tension does not appear to be a major factor at this time between the Arabs and Jews in Palestine, who at the grassroots level appear to enjoy cordial neighborly relations. But among the Arab ruling and owning class, there is a spirit of intense nationalism and, coupled with it, religious fanaticism and fear of Western ideas. It is very significant to note the progress which Western ideas introduced by the Jews have already made among the Arabs in Palestine. For example, in the last 15 years, the Arab life expectancy has been raised from 37 to 48 years, and the infant mortality has been reduced to almost 50%. I was informed by a British representative at the highest levels that there is a deep interest in Arab communities and education, and that Arabs, even in outlying villages, constantly ask for better schools and are even interested in classes for girls. I gather quite a departure in that country.
Well, Congressman Javits, in view of all that, how do you account for the social difficulties?
The social tensions present in Palestine are now largely between the Jews and the British. These are based on the restraints on immigration and land purchase enforced by the British, though we should not forget that Britain is continuing to admit 1,500 refugees every month. For example, the municipal activities of the city of Tel Aviv, a modern all-Jewish city of 250,000, require the prior authorization of a British district commissioner. Tel Aviv has its own mayor and a very competent municipal council. The status of such a British district commissioner in the civil service hierarchy of a city like Tel Aviv in our country would put him at about a department head level.
Well, what would you suggest then to end this social tension and this violence?
The terroristic acts in Palestine, which have caused such grave tension between the British and the Jews, must be condemned in the strongest terms, and have already been so condemned within and outside of Palestine by all who desire justice and the realization of legitimate Jewish aspirations there. We must recognize that this terror, which ends in political crime, begins in political frustration, and I am convinced that a policy of justice in Palestine is the necessary moral basis for ending the terror.
Well, I wish, Congressman, that you could tell us something about the political aspects of the dispute. Many observers I know are puzzled about the diplomatic implications involved.
On the political side, it is easy to be puzzled, as many are, about the special diplomatic considerations involved in the Palestinian situation. The British say they seek only a just solution between Jews and Arabs. The Jews say justice cannot mean breaking the promise to encourage Jewish immigration and close settlement of Jews on the land of Palestine. The British say that restrictions against purchase by Jews of Arab land in Palestine are essential to protect the Arab against himself. Yet land, if purchased in a free market, under objective supervision, would make any Arab interested in selling rich enough to command his own estate in any other Arab country. Some argue that Britain's policy is dictated by a fear that the Arabs will turn to communism if aggrieved in a Palestinian settlement. But prosperity and education for the Arabs, both of which have been concomitants of Jewish settlement, are the greatest discourages of communism. Arab sympathy for the Palestinian Arabs is said to be greatest in Iraq and Syria, the very points where Britain has the greatest stake in oil resources. But fear of retaliation by the Arab world is unjustified if the settlement in Palestine be just to the Arabs, and there should be no design for other than a just settlement. For all the discussion of a Jewish Palestine, we must not forget that we are speaking only of a free state with a Jewish population, which may be permitted to become equal to or greater than the Arabs. No one has proposed to move out the Arabs or to treat them other than as equals, and any such proposal would, of course, be unthinkable.
Well, this week a conference convened in London, Congressman, to take up many of these problems. From what you report, I gather that action is, well, it's imperative.
Of one thing the world may be certain, the situation of the Jews in Europe and in Palestine will grow worse on all counts the longer a solution is deferred and tension remains at a peak. The London conference will not be realistic if it fails to recognize that the essentiality is land settlement, admission of refugees from Europe into Palestine, and the lifting of land sale restrictions. Political agitation is easily advertised as a technique for bringing about land settlement, but so far it has been retarding land settlement. Most Jews I talked with in Palestine feel that partition is probably the only practicable answer. But partition will take time for agreement on boundaries, on new constitutions, on economic and political relations. In the meantime, Jewish land settlement is urgently needed, and with it, greater Jewish and Arab participation in internal administration.
And I believe you suggest, Congressman, action on the part of our own country.
Certainly. The prestige of the United States is very high in Palestine. A plan by which the United States will join through a special mission to Palestine for that purpose in supervising increased immigration and land settlement now and the resumption of free land purchase is likely to ease the immediate political pressure considerably. I urge that implementing legislation be passed at the very earliest convenience of the Congress.
Well, we have some time, Congressman Javits, to look into the situation in Greece. Suppose you tell us about your investigation there.
Well, the very land of Greece looks free and independent. From the air, the Lord seems to have thrown a handful of mountain and valley into an azure sea and made Greece. Greece has suffered terribly during the war. 1,400 villages razed, 400,000, almost one out of three homes destroyed, the country stripped bare, the roads, railroads, and other means of communication ruined, rolling stock taken away, livestock taken off the farms. The Nazis even carted away much of the furniture out of the people's homes. The heroic resistance of the Greek people to the fascist and Nazi hordes earned for the Greeks this treatment. Battered and destroyed in its human and material resources, with its productive plant all but gone, Greece, already a poor country, faces despair.
Well, what about the problem of communism in Greece? Is there a demand, a swing to the left?
Much has been said about communism in Greece, but the country is not designed for it and doesn't want it. Internal economic pressures and a people driven almost to despair leads men to violence against a government which they think ought to do something about it. Such violence of a leftist character produces in turn the reaction of violence on the right. The presence of British troops now justified on grounds of internal security is another complicating element. Under the circumstances, it's not hard and might even be attractive for outside interests to fish in the troubled waters.
In short, Greece is struggling to make our own Western type of democracy work.
Greece, despite its desperate situation, is still trying to operate with a completely free enterprise economy. The tradition of law and human rights remains vigorous and alive. Certainly a country like that is not of a mind for communism. The internal situation in Greece is made critical by an elementary food problem. The people of Greece hope for aid from the people of the United States. The confidence that it will be forthcoming sustains them in all their struggles. They hope, too, that a political settlement will not be sought through this aid, nor any Greek government be propped up by it. It is important to remember that Greece does not have now the productive facilities to get going. These facilities have to be obtained first. Their problem in controlling inflation is much more like our own during the war period than like our own during the reconversion period.
Well, Congressman Javits, would American financial help aid in Greek restoration?
Greece illustrates for us the basic principles which need to be observed in making a grant for urgent necessities of life to a country in need. First, such a grant should be from the people of the United States to the Greek people and should not be a diplomatic pawn. Second, it should be a grant for Greece and should not be extended out of a fund for grants appropriated in a blanket way. Third, it should require Greece to do as much as possible to help herself. We should, therefore, have a United States mission in Greece to supervise the use of our grant with power to suspend or terminate payments if she is not doing enough to help herself.
Well, how about technical aid, engineering aid?
In addition to its problem of basic food, Greece also has the problem of reconstruction, needing not only money but technical aid. When Greek resistance organizations were being urged by Allied radio broadcasts to sabotage the Nazis, they were promised restoration and reconstruction by the Allied powers of all that was destroyed, even better than it had been before. Greece remembers that promise.
Well, thank you, Congressman Javits. Representative Jacob K. Javits of New York was guest on this transcribed edition of the Washington Front. This is Gil Kingsbury reporting to you from the nation's capital and returning you to WINS in New York.